BGSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples.
Welcome to Cancreer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
Now, at time of recording, we recorded this a little bit earlier, the world hasn't stopped. If you're listening to us in Toronto, you probably just witnessed the solar eclipse. Because, of course, we broadcast live from, I believe, 4 to 5 p.m. In Toronto out of CRUT-FM and elsewhere across the country at local stations from coast to coast to coast. You can always catch us online by going to Cancreer, wherever it is that you find your podcasts. So we are always available online. All right. That being said, let's dive into non-astrological...
Why would the world stop on account of the moon passing between the Earth and the sun?
And metaphorically.
Oh, I see.
Did you hear that apparently Niagara Falls had to declare a state of emergency about a week in advance of the solar eclipse? Because they were expecting so many people to come and watch the eclipse from Niagara Falls.
I thought they were on the southern edge of the shadow zone. Niagara Falls is a weird beast. If you don't live in southern Ontario or even anywhere near Niagara Falls and you've never been, then you don't know how much of a weird beast the city of Niagara is.
It is quite bizarre.
Yeah.
No, I don't know how it would be to be a local in that area. I imagine it's similar to being a resident of Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
I mean, I've known a lot of people from St. Catharines, which is right next door to Niagara. They basically say we do everything in our power to avoid having to go into Niagara, but sometimes there's no Costco or whatever, and then they have to, and they're just the traffic is miserable and the people are weird, and it's a thing. It's a thing. Niagara Falls is a weird beast. Everyone should go there for once, for sure. The waterfall is shocking, but the city itself is bizarre. A really disappointing buffet. Buffets everywhere, and it's always disappointing. Just disappointing.
Actually, when my partner Jake, his Vietnamese parents came over, and we didn't know where to go for food, we brought them to Niagara Falls, and I believe we went to the Applebee's buffet. I think it was Applebee's.
Okay.
Which is really, if you were to define a disappointing buffet, this is no offense to Applebee's, but it may not have been Applebee's.
Uh-huh.
There was a buffet of whose name I can't confirm in Niagara Falls. And Jake's rather health conscious mother was somewhat disappointed in the selection, but his dad had a great time.
no health conscious. I mean, there's one thing that I'll say about the food in Niagara, and they have some of the best funnel cakes in the country.
But true that.
That is just a giant extra 5 pounds on your body weight right there. Even if you're eating 40 grams of it, it's just going to expand in your body and break space time to put more weight on you than you actually ate. That stuff is fattening, but good.
I mean, whenever I go to Canada's Wonderland, and you walk through that entrance, the main.
I was going to say they have the second best funnel cakes.
I usually my insulin, my blood sugar levels increase just from smelling the funnel cakes. I'm pretty sure they have vents and they gas it into the whole park to make you want funnel cakes. But we are a gay news talk show. let's pivot over to some gay news.
Mm-hmm.
We have mentioned several times the deportation case of Tarun Gudara. Mm-hmm. Now, Tarun came to Canada he was an international student. He's been on a graduation work permit that expired in 2022. He got, unfortunately, things happened. And the Canadian Border Service Agency is now working on deporting him. That's where we'd left off the update a little while ago.
Yes.
The border agents essentially said, look, it's no longer illegal to be gay in India. Yeah. They recently decriminalized homosexuality. They've also looked at, we've mentioned several times, the court cases around same-sex marriage and unions. Things are moving slowly forward in the right direction.
India is off the list of countries where you can apply for refugee or... Was refugee status or the other one? What's the other one? Asylum status for your sexual identity.
It seems to be like, yes, we know it's not bad. It's not good, but it's also not bad enough.
Yes.
Seems to be the case. Now, interesting, a local resident spoke to the CBC as they held a protest outside of the local MP's office there to try and stall or get political pressure to prevent this deportation. And local activists are saying, look, you know, I have no intention of visiting India because of their human rights record. But yeah, it seems like there is another court case where the decision is being challenged. This gentleman has a lot of, Tarun has a lot of support in the community, but is it enough? Who knows? We'll continue to keep an eye on that story as it develops. We have also seen more people signing on to the 400 plus musicians, artists, actors, various Canadian artists of different, political stripes, singers, songwriters, etc., has signed on to that letter condemning the anti-trans policies in several provinces across Canada. Mm-hmm. It picked up a bit of steam this week as their collective celebrity poll raised the profile of the protest. We've not seen anything else come out from it just yet, but we are aware that that has been bubbling up. I'm sure you saw something about that as well.
Oh, yes.
There's now, and I want to talk about a study out of Denmark.
Ooh, a Danish study.
You know, I always love studying Danishes. And specifically, this is a study of Danish men, also something I'm not totally against. Mm-hmm. Eurosurveillance looked at over 1,300 men who took pre-exposure prophylactics, which is essentially a medication that you would take to help prevent the contraction of HIV. So it's essentially a HIV antiretroviral drug that, if taken in advance, can help prevent catching HIV.
And a few other viruses as well.
Yes, absolutely.
That's a good approach, yeah.
Now, the idea that's sort of floating out there, and they talk about things like the compassion matrix and the risk compensation values, and I looked it over. It's a rather complex study. Folks are more than willing to find it yourselves. It's on Eurosurveillance. But the idea they were thinking about is this. If you have a magic pill that stops you from taking HIV, will that person then do more risky sex behavior? Now, this is in the context of, broadly speaking, in the gay community, the use of condoms has gone down. Mm-hmm. The use of pre-exposure for prophylactics, which is the medication to help prevent catching HIV, that use has gone significantly up. It's now being used in about 144 countries. It's one of the key tools in addressing the HIV pandemic. So, right. Seb, what have you heard in the world of does PrEP make you more of a HIV, more of a sexual STI risk?
Well, the link seems to go in the opposite direction of the assumption. So it's not that if you take the pill, you'll be more likely to engage in risky behavior. It's that if you already engage in risky behavior, you're more likely to take the pill. So the best analogy, I mean, it's sort of like, you know, if I gave you a motorcycle helmet, your partner now has a car, but you also have an electric bike. Will you take that motorcycle helmet when you're going in the car with your partner? Probably not. But if you're taking the bike, you probably would. Mm-hmm. So it's the same basic idea that it's people who are engaging in risky behavior already are protecting themselves. It's not like, well, I have a helmet, I may as well take the bike. Like that's not how it works. Or at least that's what they're finding, is that in this case, that's not how it's working. And the overall instances of risky behavior is about constant. It's just people are more likely to protect themselves now that they have these.
I mean, there's a lot of really interesting things to consider in this. Really, they got the hypothesis. Do folks who know that taking a medication where the risk level of getting HIV and other things is lower, will they then do other things that is maybe a little bit riskier if, you know, the most risky things are off the table? But what they found was that wasn't necessarily the case. Just to add on to what you were saying, Sebastian, they found that, in fact, it wasn't a case of, look, here's this magic pill, now you'll never get HIV. And they're like, great, I'm going to become a local bicycle. No, that wasn't the approach that was being taken. But rather, it was a case of, hi, I'm engaging in intimate liaisons with multiple partners and therefore want to be safer. And rather, it's driven by folks who are having intimate liaisons and just want to take better care of their health than the other way around. And I thought that was interesting because it also demonstrates a sort of commitment to broader health. I will stress that in this cohort and in the queer community in general, specifically gay male community, where rates of HIV is, you know, it's not going up in the way it used to, which is fantastic news. Less HIV out there is amazing. The rates of gonorrhea, syphilis, and chlamydia have gone up. So people, yeah, don't forget about the other things that are important to our overall health. Really, weirdly enough, it was when it comes to the anatomy and where the issue was most broad, it was the rectum concerns. Issues with gonorrhea and chlamydia over the rectum really spiked up for folks who were on PrEP.
But you don't say.
Yeah, who knew?
Yeah,
I would never have guessed that. But yeah, long story short, does PrEP make you more susceptible to gonorrhea, chlamydia, and syphilis? The answer
is... In retrospect, actually, this makes me think more of in the 1960s, there was a campaign against putting safety belts in every vehicle because they thought that if it was obligatory to have safety belts available and you were required to use them, that everyone would drive like a maniac. That was one of the arguments they had in the 60s. What they actually found is that people who drive recklessly, drive recklessly. People who drive drunk, drive drunk. People who drive safely, they drive safely regardless. So the safety belt doesn't change the behavior. It just protects you if something happens.
I do think it does pose this sort of question to gay folks everywhere. You know, I mentioned earlier, I mentioned last week about needing to book my new appointment for the Mpox vaccine. I think it's really important that we not lose sight of our overall health. And we discussed this a little bit last week as well. But yeah. It doesn't make you more at risk, but rather people who are being a little bit risky are more likely to see the side effects of that. So it's the first time this particular hypothesis has been studied. And it was about, I think it was 1700 people in Denmark overall.
Those are good numbers.
Quite an interesting study. You also found another academic study, if I recall correctly.
Yes, this one coming from the States, and we only sometimes report from the States. Quite often, when you're looking at large studies between America and Canada, Canadian and American culture, as much as this irks a few people, our cultures are similar enough that you can transfer data. But this is about the healthcare system, and our healthcare systems are different enough that you may as well be reporting on, I don't know, Latvia. Anyway, yeah, so this is a very large study. Why can't I remember how many people they studied? Well, anyway, thousands of participants. Basically looking at the role of LGBT identity as people interact with the healthcare system. And they asked dozens of questions, and out of all the answers that they got out of it, there's quite a few things that sort of popped out. So in general, the broadest conclusion they came to is that it's about two, depending on what the question is, but it kind of averages out to be, it's about twice as bad for an LGBT individual to interact with the American healthcare system. So things like you're going to be insulted by your doctor about twice as often, you're going to be denied help twice as often, you're going to have your questions ignored twice as often. Each of these questions will be a little bit different. Sometimes it's three times, sometimes it's four times. Something that came out of the data that they found quite surprising is that if you're looking at heterosexuals going through the American healthcare system, there are pretty big race disparities that white people usually interact with the healthcare system more positively than Hispanics, who interact more positively than Black folks. But what they actually found is that if you're looking at LGBT folks, it's about the same, regardless of race. So it seems like whatever you're looking at, sexual identity and gender identity seem to sort of overplay race as a factor when you're talking about positive and negative influences. They also found that if you are low income, you're more likely to have a very bad experience. Younger people are more likely to have a bad experience than older people. I think some of that is, as you age, you learn how to talk to doctors. If there's any doctors listening, bless your heart, but you need to learn how to think like a doctor to communicate to a doctor. And I know this as somebody who's just riddled with autoimmune diseases.
We're pretty sure you're going to turn into a werewolf at the, at the next full moon.
I recently had plastic surgery on my eye, and my optoplastician, as much as he's the best in Ontario, is an absolute dingus. I found him intolerable to speak to. But I don't think that's because I'm gay. I think that's just because he's very old school. The number of surprises that I got following my surgery were in the follow-up was like, why didn't you warn me about that? He's like, well, I didn't want to panic you. It's like, I panicked because I didn't know what was going to happen. Like, all you had to do was tell me this is what might happen. And this
side effects may include.
Yeah. And this is what you do if that does happen. This is how you prepare for it. This is how you fix it. In my case, it's like, yeah, it's like 1 in 8 people experience that side effect. It's never not gone away. At worst, it's going to take 6 months to go away, but it always goes away. Don't worry about it. It's like, that's all I needed to know. Why are you keeping me in the dark? But anyway, so this would be considered a negative experience that would be captured by this study. And it does seem to be, in general, for most measures, about twice as bad. So now this is American data. I would not be shocked if Canadian data is analogous. I'm not going to say the same because training is pretty different here. A lot of the health schools in medical schools in Canada use the McMaster model. So they're a lot more interactive. It's a lot more conversation based, a lot more trying to, you know, get real information out of you. They also actually found mental health aspects were very negative. People were just outright being denied, like people showing up to the doctor's office, because in some states, and this is actually also true in Ontario to a small degree, you need to go through your family doctor to get a reference to some kinds of mental health. You need to start with the premise that it's not your thyroid, it's not your liver, you don't have depression because you have unmonitored diabetes or something. Like, they go through the usual thing and they're like, okay, you do have some kind of fundamental healthcare needs, and we're going to forward you on to the right people. But yeah, in the States, a lot of the subjects who were involved in the study basically just said they just get ignored. They don't get passed on. Their questions are not treated appropriately, the usual. So it is kind of tragic that in current year, where the healthcare system is kind of touting itself as being very progressive, and they're still finding these issues. I don't know if it's cultural. I don't know if it's structural. I don't know if it's something like, you know, do LGBT people know how to talk to their doctor in a way that gets their doctor to listen? Because you do have to communicate with them in the same language that they listen to. But like, you shouldn't need to be trained on how to speak to a professional who's trained to listen. So, I mean, I don't know. It's pretty complicated.
Well, we also did see an example of that in Canada just the last month or two. We talked about just briefly Drake Jensen and his partner who went to go see a doctor. And the doctor took one look at the charts and said, "You've got genital warts. That's all of your problems." And just didn't want, I mean, he didn't say genital warts. He said condyloma, without defining what condyloma was. And then, you know, a Google search later that evening reveals. But it was a case of a doctor who took one snap judgment, saw two big gay men, assumed any health concern must be related to their gayness.
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, back pain is solved by condyloma. But it was not that. And a complaint was then made with the Quebec health authorities and elsewhere.
That actually was a finding in the study as well, the number of doctors who just attribute health problems to being gay. I actually ran into this when I was dying from thyroid disease. They basically said, "You're just tired all the time because you party too much and drink too much and have an unhealthy lifestyle." And it was later when a doctor was like, thyroid test, whatever. It's the cheapest, fastest test on the market other than diabetes. We'll just throw a test at you. So, I mean, it's shocking. But yeah, no, this is a thing. LGBT people know this. We've been through this. We have friends who've been through this. We know. But
it is one of those things that we refer to as minority stress. All right. We're going to be playing now Talk Me Down by Drake Jensen. Mm-hmm. And we have a bit of a country focus in celebration of Orville Peck's new song with Willie Nelson. But this is Talk Me Down by Drake Jensen. We will be back just after this.
With a name and number on it, though, darling, seems like a good idea. Just to hear your voice again, you don't know how bad I want it. Lord, I need to clear my head before I do something I regret.
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian, and I actually just realized that I did a bad, not good at the end of the last segment. I didn't attribute. So if you want to find that study we were talking about before, about LGBT experiences with health, it's on kff.org. So you can find that there.
Excellent. Now,
it's a real thing that happened.
I want to move on to another study. This one is being done by University of Toronto Economics. I swear I enunciate for a living. The University of Toronto Economics PhD student, Taryn Eames. Now, they did research on whether or not having your pronouns on your CV or resume would impact your hireability. So what they did is they sent 7,970 completely fake CVs or resumes to various job vacancies across 15 different U.S. cities. And one of the resumes didn't have their pronouns on it. It was just a generic name. And the other resume did have the pronouns on it. It could be they, them, he, her, he, him, she, her, so on. So that's the basis of it. There's a control group with the name, all the exact same qualifications. Like, the, you know, this two fictitious people are identical, with the exception of their resume having their gender pronouns on it. And what they found was that, what do you think happened, Sebastian? Well,
so there have been multiple trending videos on YouTube and TikTok and other social media platforms where HR reps are saying, regardless of how things get filtered out by the computer, because like 90% of large corporations just have robots reading your resume, once it gets across human eyes, a lot of them will bin any resume with pronouns written on it, regardless of whether or not they quote unquote match. So if your name is Jennifer and you have she, her, they don't care. It's the fact that you put the she, her there. They just bin them. Unless you're in places like Seattle or San Francisco, at which point they will bin you if you don't. So it seems to be, broadly speaking, I would say that it's industry specific and it's also location specific, but as a broad sweeping generalization, regardless, if you indicate your pronouns on your resume, they'll just ignore them. That would be my guess.
That they get broadly ignored?
Yeah.
I mean, you're not that far off. So essentially, like I said, we've got resume with pronouns, resume without pronouns.
Right.
And for those that included specifically they, them pronouns, they were 5.4% less likely to have a response from the employer. So, and that's just from including their pronouns. They also, because they were testing the American market, not the Canadian market, despite being Canadian researchers, but they also found that the non-response rate was double in Republican areas compared to Democrat areas. But yeah, essentially, it does not necessarily help to have your pronouns used. And in, for example, a male-dominated industry, the inclusion of a they-them pronoun had a 11.8% lower response rate to the same resumes without the use of pronouns.
I know they've done similar things with resumes with and with, well, according to the name. So there, I've seen studies, this was years ago, so I can't even remember where I saw this, but similar studies that they did about surnames and first names. So if you have surnames that are not sort of typically European, where people might be able to recognize it as being Anglo-Saxon or French or Norwegian or something. So they are finding that, unfortunately, it is not qualifications first for various issues, which is kind of frustrating, I'm sure.
I mean, I think that this is advice that minority folks have to live with. You know, when I put my resume together, I have worked specifically in work related to the LGBT community. So for me to not include that in my resume would remove some of my most relevant experience. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I would have to be pretty darn confident that the employers I'm applying to see that as an asset as opposed mm-hmm. to not.